This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Lana. I'm glad you've chosen to listen to this program featuring two terrific women, the first being Sinead McCarthy, who is a musician, independent childbirth educator, doula, and alternative health advocate. She has a bachelor's in psychology and has conducted independent studies in a number of different fields, including natural medicine, mind control, childhood development, and parenting styles. She broadcasts sporadically on Renegade Broadcasting and is the founder of sacredmaternity.com, which offers info regarding natural, undisturbed birth, as well as free consultations. She's also the co-founder of AryanWomen.com, a social network for European women all over the world. Also from Scandinavia, Megan Elizabeth joins us. She has made it her life's mission to go deeper into the heart of the past, not merely historical, but primarily spiritual. Through music, writing, art, travel, she aims to do her part to apply what her ancestors have to teach into a present-day context and to forge a better future. So why are European women more supportive of mass immigration and multiculturalism? We'll discuss why European women can't see that there are forces who are actively working to destroy their culture and race. From miscegenation programming and being called racist for wanting to date their own race, white women are pushed in the name of altruism to make brown babies, if any babies at all, falling in line with the Zionist anti-white agenda. Sinead and Megan will discuss the politically incorrect side of miscegenation. We'll also talk about feminism and the detrimental effects of women sleeping around. Later, we'll talk about why white birth rates are low. How do we encourage white women to have more children and destroy the misconceptions about child rearing? They'll also share fertility tips for women, and later we discuss ways to raise our European children in a multicultural world. Why do I keep hammering on the subject of multiculturalism? Well, because I love my folk. I love the diversity already present among my European brothers and sisters. I want to see us thrive, evolve, and achieve excellence as a people. Multiculturalism is not going to bring excellence, as we can already clearly see. Megan and Sinead, welcome to the program. I guess we'll start off with you. Hi, Sinead.
Hi, Lana. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. And hi to you, Megan.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, Sinead, I guess we'll start with you. So maybe we could talk about your awakening into the anti-white agenda, I suppose we can call it.
Well, for me, it was a slow awakening. I guess when I started to realized that non-whites really didn't like my people was when I was about 16 years old, and I moved from Connecticut, which is on the East Coast, northeast of the United States, and I moved all the way across to New Mexico. And this was quite the culture shock for me, growing up in a predominantly white neighborhood and white school. So I was probably one of five white people, not even females, about five or six white people at my high school in New Mexico. And the rest were Mexican, you know, Mexican American or Native American. And they hated me from the moment I stepped foot in that school. They really disliked me. And I started to think, wow, okay, I really don't fit in here. I don't know why they hate me so much. I've never even talked to them, but I knew that I was being judged because of the color of my skin. So then, you know, I kind of had that in the back of my head. I never really saw any agenda going on, but I just knew that truth from my own life. And as I moved to New York City, I got involved with some 9/11 activism. Once I had done some research and found out that this was a complete lie, then I kind of, you know, kept going with the research and realized, oh, there's a lot of Jews behind this. Oh, Israel. and then I started to see quotes being posted from different people saying basically, you know, we need to abolish the white race, and this is the agenda of Zionist Jews to do so. And it really, it solidified for me when someone sent me a half-hour-long, basically propaganda video showing black-on-white violence, and that's what finally just, whew, like slapped me awake, and I realized, oh my God, this is really bad. We've got a real serious issue here. Mm-hmm. And from that moment on, I just keep discovering more and more information, and it's so obvious. It's right in front of our eyes. So I just had to kind of snap out of the stupor I was in.
It's amazing how you can miss it, and I think that's because whites are, we think about race the least. That's why exactly. we miss it when it's happening. So Megan, exactly. Megan, what was your experience waking up to this?
It was pretty gradual as well, and also probably came about by exploring the so-called conspiracy theory avenue. I mean, I didn't have any real sudden experience like Sinead moving to a new place and then being the only white person. But I was always interested in, you know, my heritage, root, history, and preserving culture. And maybe the root of all of this, I could say, was when I really just became so disillusioned by Christianity and then started exploring paganism. And then from exploring paganism, then it led me to, you know, Nordic paganism, that whole pantheon. And the more I got into that, the more I began to think about what it means to be from a specific part of the world, and then what connection that I have to the earth, you know, as a part of that. And then that also put me into contact with, you know, various ideas about race and the whole thing with the conspiracy theories, you know, and the whole Zionist thing keeps coming up, that, you know, everything just got clearer and clearer for me. And I feel like I'm still having revelations, you know, like still on this road of seeing just how deep this really runs, because it just goes so deep, you know, and I'm still shocked by certain quotes that I read, and, you know, this agenda that's behind everything.
Now, so everyone knows, you're up in Norway as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I grew up in the USA. I don't know if I mentioned that.
No.
And then I spent most of my adult life in Germany. And then I've lived in Norway for the past 3 years. I mean, my background is Swedish and German. And just to find that the state of Europe was so, you know, different from the way I imagined it. When I grew up, my grandmother constantly talked about Sweden, so I thought that it was this bastion of culture and that it was a place that I could go and live someday and, you know, discover my ancestors and my roots. And, you know, the same thing with Germany. And so then when I moved to Germany, and it was, you know, there is a lot of culture still, and there was a lot of that, but then to see just how, you know, multicultural it's become, and multicultural and a lot of unrest below the surface that people don't speak out really. Although I have to say, I think the Norway is the worst for the countries that I've lived in this regard, that, you know, there's unrest beneath the surface, but people are really afraid to speak out. They'll mention things when they're comfortable in Germany, but I digress.
It's okay. Yeah, it's I noticed, you know, after living in Sweden too, the Nordic countries have been hit the worst. I mean, I couldn't talk about any women with these issues. And so that brings me to my next point. How do we get more European women involved to see that there are forces that are actively working to destroy European identity, culture, and race, because they're just not seeing it?
I think women are, like, they like to, many of them like to play it safe, you can say. I think that's part of it. And, you know, and they want acceptance, and, you know, even when they're acting rebellious, they want to be feeling safe and secure somehow. I think that's part of it. And then I think that some of it is just, they're just not trained to think like that. Like, they just don't think about it. Like, for example, I had a conversation with, you know, this young woman who had been dating a half black guy, and I said, well, don't you want your children to look like you? And she said, oh, but the mixed babies, they're so cute, and my baby could get blue eyes. And I said, but how often does that happen? And it's a really big gamble, and do you want people to think that you're babysitting your child everywhere you go? Because they very well could think that. And then she said, oh, I didn't think of it like that. It's like, well, you're beautiful. Don't you want to pass on your beautiful blonde hair and blue eyes?
Yeah.
If you know, and, oh, I didn't think of that. And I didn't think I was beautiful either. So part of it might be this conditioning that women think, okay, I'm nothing special, but it's exotic to be black or Asian. So I want to find somebody who is of that ethnicity, and then my children will be more interesting than I am because I'm so vanilla and boring.
Well, let's just clarify here too. Blondes are rare. Blondes are special.
Yeah.
What do you think, Sinead?
Well, I definitely agree with what Megan said. That was really well said. I also think that as women, the majority of women, we like to follow trends and we don't really like to go against the grain because we, you know, we tend to befriend. We're more of a group kind of being. So I think if something is looked down upon or it's not cool and it's not being shown to us in the media constantly, we're not going to do it. And this agenda has been going on for so long to demonize the white man, especially, and just white culture and heritage, that it's seen as uncool. And, you know, why would you want to marry a white man? They're so boring. And like Megan was saying, oh, you can have an exotic looking child. I also think that European culture, we don't know really anything, especially over here in the United States. We just think that their culture is just like us. But all of us have a rich history and heritage that a lot of us aren't aware of and weren't taught as children. So I think I'm starting to see it come out more and more now. Learning about paganism, learning about the runes, traditional dress, all of these things, I think they can be made cool. And it will attract more women to want to, you know, maybe partake in those things.
Did you also come from a Christian background?
I did. I wouldn't say it was more tradition for my family. They're Irish Catholic, so we would go to church once in a while just because it was the thing you do. But it wasn't really, you know, driven into my head constantly.
So why do you both think, too, women are more naive when it comes to accepting multiculturalism? They have this fantasy that they're being enriched and it's going to help the world and stop poverty.
Well, I think they're playing to our instinctual need to want to take care of people and be nurturing and be nice. And women, you know, we are the more emotional creature. And I think they play on our emotions and get us to not use our logic, to go simply off of emotion and to not really think logically about these situations. You know, we can't feed the world. We can't bring in all of these people, but they constantly play on the emotion of, oh, but this poor child, and oh, don't you want to help them? So I think they really, they know how our psychology works and they use it against us.
What do you think, Megan?
Absolutely, I agree with that completely. Yeah, it's exploiting the weakness, you could say, and, you know, leading people by emotion simply, and, you know, you don't think about the fact that the Western nations cannot support all of the, you know, people from the third world who are coming in. It's just not possible, and it lowers the standards of life in the, you know, Western countries. But that's not something people take into consideration. They just think, okay, we have to help the people, and then once they're here, we can't throw them out. Like they say in Norway, you know, the kids come with the parents, and then when they're supposed to be sent back, you know, maybe the parents were denied asylum status, but the children had been going to school here for years, and then, well, we can't send them back, you know, they have all of their friends in Norway, they can only speak Norwegian, they will be foreigners in another country, you know. But if you had, for example, a Norwegian family living in Africa for many years, when it's time for them to go back, nobody would say a word. Mm-hmm. It would just be, okay, they'll go back to Norway, that's where they belong, fine, no problem. But with, you know, these asylum seekers here, they'll just keep them here forever because, you know, the poor children. So they use this, oh, poor children line as an excuse for a lot of things, you know, when it suits them.
Oh, yeah. Well, president of the ADL, he's such a wonderful guy, Abe Foxman. He made the speech in 1998 where he says, "It is now time to make sure the white race becomes extinct through miscegenation and having a virtually zero birth rate. We have all enjoyed the vision repeated all over this world every day of the last white children playing with little dark children and knowing that they are being set up for their eventual destruction. We can ruin the ancient pure bloodline of the Aryan child by convincing him or her of the altruism of begetting interracial children." So what are your thoughts on this, Sinead?
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, that's a perfect example of how in your face this is and how a lot of us just choose to look away when it's so blatant. I think it's absolutely disgusting, but it makes sense because they've wanted us gone for a long time. The fact that he can go on and say these words with little to no repercussion just shows you who's in control. If one of us, white men or women, were to say the same thing about Jews, Blacks, Hispanics, Arabs, we would be thrown in jail in some cases. We would probably be shot. So that just shows you the double standard.
What do you think, Megan?
Yeah, I agree that it's absolutely disgusting and there's a double standard. I mean, even if we pointed out that this was said by a Jewish person, then we would be looked upon as, anti-Semite and, anti-Jew and all of that. But, it's the double standard that they get to say that and then it's okay. I hope that it won't come to be as they say, as this guy said, that it would, the extinction is coming. I hope that more people will learn of this quote's existence and as a result think about it and rethink what that has to do with their life and their future and, their children's future.
I think it's very interesting, too, that there's a lot of hateful Jews that are basically encouraging whites and blondes to race mix themselves out. Meanwhile, on the sly, they're hoarding and getting blonde Aryan sperm and eggs. Like, okay, yeah. What's going on there? Fishy.
That's really disturbing, honestly. I listened to that interview that Henrik did with Janice, and she's recently written an article on it too. It doesn't surprise me, but it also really concerns me because there's going to be a whole generation of Aryan-looking Jews, possibly being born, and then how do we determine who is who? And I think that's their agenda. They want that confusion and they want to be able to even more, disguise themselves as being white when they want to blame everything on white people, but then separate and say, oh no, but I'm a Jew.
I'd like to find all those embryos and set them free, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I agree.
Well, media is trying to persuade white women to be attracted to non-white men constantly. And the white guy, like you were saying earlier, Sinead, he's always the loser now. And the black man is the hot one. I can give you tons of examples. Yeah. And some women are actually falling for this program. So why are women so weak to follow what they see on TV? Megan, let's start with you.
I think it's partly they play upon the fact that women are intuitive and emotional creatures, and that using the power of suggestion and having, powerful images, TV is a powerful tool, before them, causes them to be attracted to what they see on some, unnatural level, but it's this, kind of subconscious or unconscious suggestion that's getting into the brain and then, causing behavior modification, basically, a form of mind control. Really, and just the fact that women are so intuitive and emotional, they're more susceptible to that kind of programming.
What do you think, Sinead?
I absolutely agree with Megan. And I also think that, as women, we seek a mate and a partner that can allocate the resources needed for us to raise our family and be secure and safe. And when white men are being disenfranchised and the same amount of resources aren't available to them, they're going to other men of other races, and women will then seek those mates. So I think that's another reason, too.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think, too, women are, they buy into what's socially acceptable. It's race mixing. It's now, it's a fad. It's a trend. And maybe it's also partly kind of rebellion because their parents didn't want them to do it. So now I'm going to do it.
Yeah, it's a rebellion, but it's a safe rebellion because everybody else will approve of it. I think it's also a way of showing the world, hey, look, I'm not racist. Mm-hmm. I'm with a black guy, so you can't call me racist. And that's kind of a thing here in Norway, too, is that a lot of women, even if they're not specifically dating a black man, they will say that they have dated a black man. It's some sort of rite of passage, and then they can point that out as, oh, look at, I'm not racist. I've dated a black guy. So it's like a little patch on the Girl Scout uniform, if you will.
Yeah, it's like, I'm attracted to white guys. Get over it, people. I've heard people even say, if you've just dated white guys, then that's proof that you're racist and you need to deal with it.
Oh, I've been told that as well. When I said in the past, I only date white men, and specifically Northern European white men, you know, and they said, oh, no, but that's racist. I said, there's nothing wrong with other people, but I have Northern European background, and I only want to date Northern European men, and that's my preference, so why does that make me racist?
Yeah.
And I think that, when I stated that, I was maybe, I don't know, but quite young, perhaps 19 or 20, that put into motion, you know, this, like, awakening towards the reality of things that, you know, this anti-white agenda, you know, because you can't state that you have a preference for one ethnic group without being called a racist if you are a white person. But, you know, if it went in the other direction, then that would be completely fine.
Yeah, I actually saw something the other day that was like, fuck racism, and it was promoting race mixing, and it was a white girl and a black guy.
That's
like,
great.
I mean, really? Is this the level of intelligence we're dealing with here? Cool.
Right.
Well, yeah.
In your view, I guess we'll start with you, Sinead, are there detrimental effects of miscegenation? I mean, for the children, for the relationship, what do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel bad when I see mixed children walking around with their, you know, white grandparents. I think they must be utterly confused about their identity and their culture. And, you know, I really doubt that the, you know, black mother or father is teaching them about African culture and the white parent is teaching them about European culture. I highly doubt that. So they're mm-hmm. being fed this multicultural crap and they have no identity. And I mean, even if they needed an organ transplant, they would die because there are no organs available to mixed children at this time. So, I mean, that's just one of the reasons, you know, it goes against nature. But I honestly feel very bad for them.
What do you think, Megan?
Yeah, I agree. The connection to, you know, their ancestors isn't as readily available to them as if, you know, they're 100% black or 100% white. Even if you're a kind of European mix, then it's a lot, you know, easier to still find your place within yeah. that. Like if you are a combination of, I don't know, let's say Dutch and German, you're still Germanic in some sense, and then you can find something going way back. You can feel the sense of heritage. You can feel a sense of belonging somewhere. And I think that's really important, to feel a sense of, you know, root
mm-hmm.
and to have that. And to deny that of your child, I think, is really cruel. An incredibly important thing that's unfortunately very underestimated, that instead of real roots and real culture, that we have this multiculturalism, which is a lack of culture. It's like if you take, you know, this Play-Doh and mix all of the colors together, that the Play-Doh isn't as nice anymore. I used to do that as a kid and then get really upset about the results. You know, the red and the yellow and the green and blue, they were so pretty separate, but then all together they became just this really ugly color. And if that's what the world is going to become, then it's going to be a less interesting place. So it's really cruel to do that to your own kids, to deny mm-hmm. them roots. And yeah, I mean, there's so much more to it. Like, I didn't know that about the organs, that organ transplant situation, but that's another element.
Yeah, so. There was a study here in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and of mixed race children, and they were suffering more from depression, substance abuse, sleep problems, various aches and pains. And they also found that mixed race children were more likely to have other health problems as well. So this is something that's serious that needs to be looked at. I mean, we're meddling with something that hasn't been done on this large of a scale before.
You just made me think of something. I remember reading a study, and maybe I'll be able to pull it up and post it somewhere, but there was a high rate of miscarriage with mixed couples. And I think that's really interesting. Obviously, you know, a lot of mixed babies go to full term because we see them everywhere, but I think there is a really high rate of miscarriage going on. So that just tells me that I don't think this is really natural.
Well, and the other aspect here is high divorce rates between
yes.
biracial couples. And what does that do to the children? I mean,
right.
We need to really look into these things. Yeah, but earlier what you guys were talking about, I like, Sinead, you're Irish, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So you know where to look. You have a Celtic heritage. Megan's Nordic. I'm Slavic. And I like that. I like knowing that I can go do some research and look into Slavic history and find my symbolism, my mythology, my ancestors have been there. I can make a pilgrimage. And I think that there's a strength and a power in that. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Now, there are lies floating around that race mixing makes a superior human genetically and also socially as they transcend race. Have you guys come across some of these lies?
I haven't directly, but I would not be surprised that people are saying that.
What about you, Megan?
Yeah, I read some things, you know, that they said that, okay, you know, if the gene pool is too shallow, then the offspring is going to suffer as a result. But then at the same time, I've read some things where some scientists dispel that rumor and say that as long as you're not inbreeding with your family members, then your gene pool is going to be deep enough, in fact. And of course, they don't directly address the fact that there can be problems as a result of race mixing, usually in some kind of like politically correct publication. You know, they won't be quick to mention that, but I've read some things such as like that, you know, if you have an Asian woman carrying a European man's child, that she's not capable of birthing that child without a cesarean section because the head is too large. So I don't know what the statistics look like in that regard, but that is an issue as well with that. So genetically, that the head of the European child, if the child takes on that characteristic of the father, then there can be problems with birthing that child without the use of the cesarean section, and that causes a more risky delivery of the child. So,
wow, that's serious stuff. Yeah, I hate when people try and say, "Oh, you whites, a bunch of inbred." You know, it's like, you know, inbreds don't have the capacity to map the globe, invent the numerous things we have, space travel. I mean, come on, this is just another way to put us down. And then, of course, culture Marxists try to say that pure race doesn't exist and we're all mutts. But if you look to the Nordic countries or Ireland, for example, they're 100% white. You know what white is. Don't you agree, Megan?
Yes, absolutely.
They love to say there's no such thing as the white race when we want to organize and identify racially. But then they'll say we have white privilege and we should have white guilt. So they know that there is a white race when they want to blame everything on us, but not when we want to organize and have pride.
God.
Exactly.
Well, could you both imagine living in a world where we're all coffee colored, all mixed up with no distinctions? Could you imagine what that would feel like?
Yeah, I feel like we're really close, honestly. I don't think it would be good for anybody.
What do you think, Megan?
It would make life a lot more boring. You know, it's very interesting to see pictures or to see personally, you know, people in the various folk costumes from their respective countries in Europe, for example, like the Slavic traditional clothing or the very elaborate Norwegian bunad, and to see, you know, the people who are ethnically connected with that. And, you know, then you have people in other parts of the world in their specific dress and then representing their type of music, you know, that you have all this different culture out there and then the real people who go with that. I mean, in Norway, you have the immigrants sometimes wearing the traditional Norwegian costume, which is a little strange, but they do that. I digress again, but these differences, like that you have so many differences within just Europe that, you know, these different traditional folk costumes, they look so different, like the German ones, or even between like regions in Germany, like the ones that everybody associates with Oktoberfest, you know, this Dirndl in Lederhosen, you have something completely different in the Black Forest region where they have these really big hats, if you've seen them. And then something completely different in the north and, you know, then in Holland. And then these places sometimes are just, you know, a few kilometers, a few miles away. And the dialect and the costume is completely different. And I think when you are also of the ethnicity that goes with that, then, and you're wearing these costumes that your ancestors also wore, then you can kind of feel what they felt and then you connect with that. Mm-hmm. And then it's something that goes back thousands of years. And that's really deep. That's something. And you think of the fact that your ancestors survived, you know, long enough for you to even walk the earth. And there's something very pure in that. And there's something very good in that. And then you think of how many people came before you, then you also want to live in a way that does them justice. And then you also think of, you know, who is going to come after you and to keep that going. So there's something very special in that. And, you know, everybody in the world has their own version of that, you know, especially if their line is a quote unquote, a pure one. You know, if you have parents or German and you're a German and then all of your ancestors are German, maybe with some mix from other European countries, you can still get into that mindset. And then you have something that you want to preserve if you're thinking about that. But if you're just thinking about, you know, buying the latest iPhone and watching TV, then you're not going to think of that and you're not going to care. And then the world is just going to become one gray mass, one brown mass of, you know, Asian, African, European mix. And then you lose all of the distinctions. So the people that want to talk about diversity, well, they're responsible for destroying real diversity, really.
Yeah, you know, we've been doing this show a while. We've been looking into a lot of topics, and there was a time before we got into this subject of, well, we can call it white genocide. That's what it is. But I was kind of getting bored of everything and just wasn't feeling anything, blah, 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 you know, same stuff. But since I've looked into my Slavic roots and looking at what's going on with whites and the condition that they're in today and seeing where things might go or where things need to go, it's invigorated something old in me, especially tapping into my old Slavic roots. It's probably the most powerful thing I've ever felt in my life when I look back into a lot of my ancestral lineage and do some digging and try and get into their mentality. And have you both been trying to do that, getting into your past a little more, seeing who your people were?
I have, definitely with my German side. I grew up, my mom moved to this country from Ireland when she was about 22. So she raised me to be really proud of being Irish. And I would go to Ireland every year and I would learn about the culture and I would go to all the different sites. And so I really had this awesome pride and understanding of Irish culture and heritage. But my German side, I just kind of neglected because I thought, oh, well, Germans are evil Nazis and I shouldn't even tell anybody I'm a German because they're going to think I'm going to kill some Jews and I'm terrible. But it's been really awesome to learn the truth about Germans and World War II and to see just how rich of a culture the German people have as well. So it's been fun to kind of relearn, you know, the history of Germans and all that they had to offer the world.
How about you, Megan? Are you digging into your ancestry?
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's been a kind of ongoing project for as long as I can remember. I mean, as a child, I was already getting into that, like trying to, you know, learn some Swedish from my grandmother. I didn't really get that far with that as a child, but then as a teenager, I made a lot of progress. And, you know, now I'm pretty fluent, but it's a bit confused with the Norwegian because the languages are so close. But really, at the moment, I'm working on a book and a film about some, you know, pagan pre-Christian sites in Scandinavia and in Germany and Austria. And that's sort of for, you know, you could say for everyone, but for me personally, to find more about these roots going back really far, because I find I'm not really satisfied just to know and feel like how it must have been to live, you know, with my grandmother's generation or at that point. I want to go further back and get as far back and, you know, deep into the roots as possible. And there really isn't that much information for that available to people, especially in, you know, really Northern Europe. And there's a little bit more information on such sites in Germany and Austria. But I feel like in Norway, they really cover up like the rune stones. Like they'll find some magnificent rune stone, you know, dedicated to the goddess Njata, and then they will hide it in literally in the closet in a museum, and they won't even, you know, reply to emails. Like, I know you have that rune stone and you're holding it.
Why are they doing this?
I don't know. They don't want people to to see this stuff or to get a clue for their ancestors. You know, it's all, you know, 17th of May, they wave the Norwegian flag and they wear the bunad and it's celebrate multiculturalism and democracy. And but that your ancestors were something besides Vikings, people don't really think about that. And the Vikings are kind of more for the tourists. People see that as, I think it's the same in Sweden. I mean, I've been there a few times.
Yeah, it's the same. Yep.
Yeah.
They don't even dig where there's mounds. They won't even excavate or do an archaeological research project. It's amazing, you know?
I mean, I know with Gamla Uppsala, a lot of those mounds were just, they got dug up just because a farmer, you know, wanted to plant. And so maybe some of these items that they found, some farmer's family has them, but
well, eventually,
yeah, and then these mounds are gone.
Eventually, the Jews will come out and say, "We were the Vikings, so now we're gonna do some, we're gonna do some digging, and we're gonna claim it as our own." You know,
yeah, probably, and the mounds will just cease to exist, really. But what I was going to say is, at least though in Sweden, it's a little bit better than in Norway that you can actually go and still see these runestones. Like they'll be in somebody's front yard, but you can find them. And in Denmark, it's the same thing. You know, a lot of people have visited these Jelling stones. And but in Norway, very few people know that these actually exist. So for a long time, I thought, okay, I live in Norway, but there aren't any runestones for me to go visit. That's really a shame. My ancestors are from Sweden, but, you know, in Germany, but I, you know, they're very closely related to the Norwegians. So I want to explore that, too. But I thought, okay, there aren't any runestones, so there just aren't any runestones in Norway. Well, there are, I came to find out, you know, not that long ago, in fact, and surprised to find out that, in fact, there were really a lot and everywhere, but everywhere they could, every time they were discovered, then somebody basically took them away, maybe put them in a museum to be exhibited, or they just put them in the back closet of some museum so that people wouldn't even get to see them. And then the stuff that they put out into the museums are, you know, maybe a couple of Viking ships in Oslo, which are kind of interesting for the tourists, but there is way more interesting stuff out there that people hardly know about. So my big goal is to get that more known and hopefully wake more people up to that, that they have something besides, you know, ice cream and sausage grilling on the 17th of May here in Norway, that there's something more besides the superficial. Because it's so important.
You're also in a pagan metal band. Isn't there a resurgence of that up in Norway? I'd say Sweden too, Iceland.
Yes and no. I mean, there isn't a really unified scene. If you hear of bands exploring these topics, you know, Badruna is getting really well known, but you don't really have a network or a scene to go by. There's a little bit more of that in Germany with music and musicians. I feel like maybe I haven't been here as long, but okay, after 3 years, it's still really nothing. It's like people come out to see the big bands play, but then they sort of disappear into the underground. So everything is very disjointed, and people are very afraid of being called a racist if they're interested in Viking things. Like all of the Viking markets will have on their website as one of the first things, "We are not racist. We are not motivated." And if you even know somebody who is politically motivated, we don't want you around. So they spend more time with leftist politics and anti-racism than they do just getting into their own culture or the actual like Viking history.
Some balls, boys. I mean, really? You come from Vikings and this is what you've become? You know,
don't want to offend anybody.
I mean, get over that. It's time to start fucking offending people. You know what I mean? Just have some balls and like, if you don't like it, you know, just get out of my face. Then if you don't like us, if we're racist, then get out of our country that we built. You know? It's time to start just putting the fist down and being hard. You know, people will respond to that. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the more people who will stand up and say that, then the more people will actually say, "Oh, I was kind of thinking that the whole time, but I was too afraid to say something."
Yes.
So few people start speaking, the more will come.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, that's what I think. As women, we have the power to nudge our boys and get them there, too.
Yep.
Absolutely, women. You do have the power for that. So start nudging those boys to get up, you know? God. So we need to talk about white birth rates. Why do you both think that those are down?
Oh man, I think there's so many different reasons. I would say, well, thanks to feminism, the woman is now told that her career is more important than having children. So a lot of women will work very hard to climb up the ladder, and then by the time they maybe are almost 40, now they're ready. They finally established the funds to be able to take some time off work. Here in the United States, we have 6 weeks unpaid maternity leave. So, I mean, that's nothing. So once they reach that age, they might be too old to conceive naturally at this point. Mm-hmm. So they may try IVF. That might not work. Then some of them might go adopt a black baby because mm-hmm. they're so awesome. I see that. I see that all the time, and it's yep. really disturbing. I think it's extremely selfish of these white people, because that black child is going to feel so out of place.
Exactly.
And you're confusing the hell out of them. Mm-hmm. Not to mention there are so many white children that could use adoption. There are orphans and impoverished children all over the world.
Yep.
I also think it's because child rearing and parenthood has been shown as something to be so awful and boring. You're just going to get fat. You're not going to be attractive anymore. You're not going to have any kind of life after you have children. And, you know, you might as well just, you know, continue to sleep around and hook up with people randomly, but not really settle down and start a family, because that's boring. And then you won't be able to go out clubbing every weekend, and it'll just be terrible. So there's this whole propaganda being pushed, especially at white people, that having children is awful and boring, and it's a burden, and you don't want to do it. Also, resources, like I was saying before, most households, both parents have to work, and it's harder to have a larger family when one of the parents has to be home if you don't have family nearby to help watch the children. There are so many different reasons, but I'll let Megan go ahead.
Just going to say, yeah, before the feminist movement, it used to be just the man made enough money to take care of everything.
Right.
And the house was paid off. And, oh, great, you
yes.
can stay home and take care of your kids. What are these women complaining about? You know,
right.
Like, be happy. So now we get to go work and raise kids. Way to go, feminists.
Which is it's very hard.
Of course
and
it is.
That's, yeah. And it's like we're being pushed into a corner here. And, you know, just to have two kids it's a struggle, and it shouldn't be.
It's easier to go on welfare, and plenty of Mexicans in America do that.
Right.
Jeez. What do you think, Megan?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I mean, in Norway, it's a little bit easier with the amount of maternity leave you get, and you get some money from the state. I mean, that is a good thing. That's the positive side of, you know, big statism. And socialism, but at the same time, it's really the same story that you need both parents to work in order to be really making enough money to support a family. And even if the man has a really good job, like an upper-level job, the woman still, to be at a normal, like Norwegian level, then the woman should work too. And they do that on purpose, of course, because, you know, the woman should work, thanks to feminism, you know, that a woman's place is in an office working for somebody. So, you know, instead of taking care of your own kids, you know, and, you know, maybe cleaning the house and, you know, helping out your husband with something, you know, because you should love your husband, you know, if you married him.
Well, that's gender roles, Megan. No. You can't cook dinner anymore.
You can't cook dinner anymore, and you can't want to stay home with your kids. I taught English in Germany, and there was a woman in one of my classes. You know, I had people of all ages in my classes, and there was a woman who was a stay-at-home mother, and she said that she got so much crap for it, but for her it was an ideal situation, and her kids loved it because they knew if they were sick, then the mother was home. And, you know, she could, you know, cook for them, and she helps her husband out with his work, and she liked it. And she, you know, she had an education, she had a job before that, but then when she got married, she decided she's going to stay home, and she was happy with it. And that situation was good for her, but what was not good is the amount of pressure from society saying that, oh, that's not what you should be doing. And then there was a girl in one of my classes, like a 17-year-old, who I asked, okay, what do you want to do as a profession? And she said, I want to have a lot of kids and I want to stay home. And she looked at me like, I dare you to just say something. And I said, oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's what you want to do. You should do it and not let anybody tell you,
exactly.
Oh, that's bad. And because if that's what you want to do, then that's what you should do. I mean, there's a lot of, at the same time, you know, you have some guys who'll say, okay, you know, on the opposite spectrum, that a woman should only stay home and only have kids and only cook, but of course not. And it doesn't mean that, you know, that's the only thing that you do. In fact, I mean, a real, like a balanced man knows that and a balanced woman knows that as well. You know, if she wants to have children and wants to do things in the house, well, I'm sure she'll also have a life and have hobbies and possibly a little job too. All of that is possible. So it's not like you can only stay home and have kids and cook and clean. No, you can, there's a lot of other things that you can do. Like people think that it has to be either or, that you have a career or you have children and that you can't have anything in between, but you can make it work. And even in the, you know, hostile environment that we are, you know, living in, where it's made very difficult for European people to have children, it's still possible and people can make it work. But I think they also need some examples for that, and more people have to start showing that and not being afraid to actually say, you know, I want to stay home and have kids because I like kids and that's nice.
I always hear from people, it's so expensive and the world is so bad out there. Meanwhile, like in Norway and Sweden, for instance, Ireland too, you guys are getting bred out because all the immigrants are having 10 kids and they're using your tax dollars to take care of those children. So why not you start fighting back? Women should start having babies because one, they're beautiful and it's great. You should be having babies. And two, the world needs them. Your country needs them. I saw Denmark. Yeah. They had a program. It was Do It for Denmark. They were trying to encourage their women to actually go on these holidays to have sex, to make babies. Can you believe that?
That's really sad that it's come to that point, that we need to have, you know, public service announcements for people to procreate. It's really sad. And while the third world masses are breeding like rabbits, and like you said, on our dime.
So how do we encourage white women to start having more children?
I think it's a multi-step process. I think that first we need to dispel the myth that childbirth is the worst possible experience you ever have to go through, and that it's super dangerous and it's an emergency and you need to pay thousands of dollars to be under the care of a doctor. I think that once we show how empowering childbirth can be and how strong women are and how they're so capable of doing this, I think that will give them a sense of pride in their accomplishment and what they have just grown in their womb and produced. It's our coming of age process as women for us to go through that. I think that's step one. And then I think we need to start making parenthood look fun and cool again. And also I think we need more communities. All of us are so isolated from our families. We've had to move, you know, across the continent for work. And it's a lot harder to raise a big family when you have no help. So I think even just trying to, you know, move closer to like-minded people, if that's possible, to start even virtual communities. You know, I know us here, we're, you know, very far away from one another, but we're able to come together for these conversations and to brainstorm. And I think that is very important, to have a sense of community when raising large families.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've been talking about kind of doing our own little social networking site so like-minded people can get together. You know, they can have a mom's meetup or a dating site, you know, one that's not cheesy, so that, you know, Aryan people can get together and start making some Aryan babies. Come on.
Yes.
Let's do it. Yeah. Megan, what do you think about men that are in Norway and Sweden? At first, I thought it was a bunch of gay men because I saw lots of men walking around with the baby trams. They take time off when the baby's still really young and they stay at home with the kids. Do you think this is good, or should the babies actually be with the mom when they're young and be with the dad a little later when they're older?
Well, it's natural that the child wants to be with the mother. They, you know, they want to be with the mom. They will cry if they are not with the mother. And then, you know, a little later, then they start to develop the bond to the father. But, you know, when they're born, they have the bond to the mother. Because after 9 months in the womb, it's the mother's voice they've heard, and then when they are born, it's the mother's, you know, breast they seek.
Mm-hmm.
In best case scenario, you know, when they're lucky enough to be breastfed. So it's that bond to the mother that should be really facilitated when babies are small. You know, I think up to at least 1 year, then it should just be, you know, uninterrupted baby and mama time. And then after that, then the father can, you know, come in and do more. I mean, of course, the father should be there for the child, you know, and the mother in the first year, but the baby just wants to be with the mom, and, you know, and that's it. And then the rest of the world be damned, really. And that's the reality of it. And while it's nice that, you know, men want to be taking care of the children, it's not the natural way, and it's not what the baby really wants. So,
Yeah,
you know, it's interesting, too, because when men are around children for long periods of time, their testosterone levels decrease. So I couldn't help but to wonder if this was more about deballing the Nordic men as well. Because when I saw them, I really thought that they were gay because they didn't have that man feeling, you know.
Right. You know, we're always being told, especially over here in this country, there's this whole campaign, breast is best, you know, breastfeed your child. It's the best gift you could ever give them. But then, oh, you have to go back to work in 6 weeks. Trying to facilitate a breastfeeding relationship while working full-time, part-time, just being away from your baby for a few hours is extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. And that is why so many women give up. Now, some people will say, oh, just get a breast pump and pump your milk for the child and leave them a bottle. Well, it's not that easy. Some women do not respond to a pump. Breast pumps are extremely expensive, and some babies do not take bottles. So, you know, they're trying to say, oh, well, we're looking out for the health of everyone. We're encouraging breastfeeding, but they're not facilitating that. They're not making it possible. So I think it's terrible what's being done.
Of course
it is. I think babies should be with their mothers for the first year, uninterrupted. Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm. Well, another aspect is infertility. White women are getting hit hard with it. And you both know, and I know, it's a lot to do with our environment and pollutants and chemicals and all that crap that we've been hit with the longest. But what are some fertility tips you both have for women who are trying to get pregnant?
I would say first, get off the birth control pill ASAP, even if you're not even planning on having a child like in the immediate future. Just get off of the pill, and hopefully, you know, women are, I know some are, but if they're thinking about fertility and children, then hopefully they're not sleeping around indiscriminately at that point. but then switch to, if you're not looking to have a baby at that exact point in time, switch to other birth control methods, because that pill will just throw the body completely off, and even inhibit the body's ability to sense out a proper mate. I mean, like the smell of a man. They say that with the pill, like if you're on the pill, that you cannot smell properly. And the smell plays a role in finding a mate. Like you should like the smell
of the pheromones.
Of the man. Yeah, exactly. And it sounds kind of like, oh, ha, ha, ha. But no, it's really important. Like if a man smells good to you, then he should be compatible to you. And perhaps it has something to do with blood type, because, you know, the type, like the rhesus negative and the rhesus positive, that can have a lot of problems during the pregnancy for the child and the mother. And so if you can't smell your proper mate, I mean, not too many people are going to go out there and say, okay, are you rhesus positive or negative? I guess there are websites for that for racist negative people, but all right, the more natural way would be, okay, your sense of smell is intact, you're not on the pill, so you can find a proper mate. And I guess it throws that off over the long, longer period of time. And it also just throws the whole brain and mentality off. So if someone wants to, like if a woman wants to, in all seriousness, find the proper mate, or is already with a man and wants to conceive a child sometime in a few years, then just by all means get off the pill, and then take it from there. Really, there are a lot of other things, but I think that's probably the most important factor for modern women, is just to stay away from the pill. Don't even get on it ever, and then to just get off of it as soon as possible.
Mm. What do you think, yep. Sinead?
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you said again. And also, two other things I wanted to add. I recently had a discussion with Sophia Smallstorm. We did a podcast together, and we were talking about the effects of wireless on the human body. I think the reason we're seeing such high rates of infertility has to do with this wireless technology and how we have our phones in our pockets. We have our iPads, our laptops sitting on our lap. She told me about something called the Zona reaction when these wireless frequency waves are being blasted into our bodies. The eggs actually harden, and this happens when, you know, the first sperm has wiggled its way into the egg. The egg will then harden because it only needs one sperm. So what's happening is the eggs are hardening before, you know, any sperm has even gotten there, and this is leaving women infertile. Hmm. And I also think ultrasound technology that's being used on gestating babies mm-hmm. is making us infertile. Also, there's this disturbing trend of egg harvesting. And a lot of young women, when I was very naive and broke, I looked into this and considered it because I didn't know what I know now. And I thought, wow, you know, $8,000, what could I do with that? I could really use that.
You mean harvesting your eggs to give away?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. This is obviously before I was really thinking.
Sure.
You know, I was just desperate and looking at ways to make money. Never did it, thankfully. My mother said, you're ridiculous, don't do that. But this is happening a lot, and women are being left infertile. You know, they're thinking, oh, I'm going to do this really great thing. I'm going to give this woman and her partner an egg so they can have a baby. And then she ends up infertile. I also think some of the vaccinations being given are, doing that on purpose. They're leaving people infertile, as well as the plastics, the products that we use, the chemicals, the makeup, everything. It's all
the aluminum and the deodorant. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Actually, and even for women, tampons and things like that are really not good. They're actually toxic. So you don't want to be putting that there where you're, trying to keep that area pristine.
Yeah, it's really important to just clean through all your products, even your clothes. I mean, there's certain clothes I put on and makes my legs itch. Like I cannot wear it. I'm super sensitive. And the longer you stay away from this stuff, you get real sensitive. Like some fancy restaurants I can't even eat in because I noticed the food right away. I don't care how much it was, $30 steak, it still made me feel really sick. Yep. So you gotta listen to your body, clean out your closets and your makeup and all your products and household products, and that will help. Definitely. It's mm-hmm. reversible, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. I've also heard that. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to add and go organic where possible. You know, there's a lot mm-hmm. of poo-pooing about organic. Oh, it's just the same as conventional, but that's not true. I mean, you're having chemicals sprayed directly on to your future food, that cannot be good. And then the notion, okay, if you stop right before, some days before you're going to eat it, that the amount of chemicals is negligible. It's not true at all. Organic where possible, and maybe it's not pristine at this point because the pollution from planes, from car traffic, whatever, but organic is still a way better option. And I noticed that it tastes better. And
definitely. I brought this up in my last interview, but I've done this, but I encourage people to go to a naturopath and get a hormone panel done because for women, high estrogen levels, which are found in all the estrogen mimicking chemicals, that can give you cancer. And we have high cancer rates right now. So if you can get that estrogen out of your body and get your levels sorted out, I think that you won't get cancer and you will be able to get pregnant.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to add, as girls growing up, we're taught all the ways to not get pregnant, right? You know, do this, don't do that. But no one really ever talks to us about our natural cycles and our fertility. And, some people, I honestly didn't know about this until a few years ago. And I didn't know that you could only get pregnant, 3 out of the 30 days. I had no idea. So, mm-hmm. A lot of people trying to get pregnant might not know this, and they might be having intercourse on a day where they're not fertile and wondering, what the heck, why isn't it working? So it's important for women to track their cycles for a few months to see how long your cycle is, when you ovulate. There are many different ways to do this. You can, you know, you can go research it. But having fertility awareness, knowing when we're fertile.
Our pagan ancestors knew this. So again, we're being severed from our roots. I mean, they used to have fertility rituals. They knew when to do what, when, and now we're so cut off from that. I mean, I don't know any Christians who know about this. It's
like, and it's really sad because, I mean, this is our bodies, that we're not even connected with our natural cycles and rhythms. How are we going to be connected with the cycles in the universe or, you know, in our natural surroundings?
Yeah, I think a lot of that too. I noticed me growing up Christian, it's very anti-nature and anti-body. Yes. That's devil worship. You can't do that.
You can't even look into
those things. So the other thing I was going to say is eating fat is important and omegas is important. This low-fat diet is bullshit. Wouldn't you both agree?
Yes. Absolutely, especially for a pregnancy, you need to eat a lot of fat. And I'm not saying eat spoonfuls of lard. You know, healthy fats, grass-fed butter, avocados, coconut oil, nuts, those kind of things.
Flaxseed oil.
Fish oils.
Well, on the subject of raising children, how should we women be raising our children in our multicultural society that basically tells them they're inherently racist? So what do you say, Megan?
They try to, you know, keep them away from that poison wherever possible. In all seriousness, and to try to connect them to what's beautiful and good about being of the ancestry that they are, and to start observing a lot of pagan holidays. Like, you can do something really nice on midsummer, the summer solstice, for Yule. Start in with these kinds of holidays, because kids like routine in that regard. So if every year you observe these pagan holidays, and you can tell them, yeah, it's like what your ancestors did, and then they have to get a sense of that from a really young age. And, start these little traditions. And, you know, they'll have such a great time that, you know, when they befriend some other kids that are maybe quote-unquote normal or status quo, then those kids will get really into it too, because, this child is having a lot of fun doing this. I want to try that too. And then, you know, it brings more people into that. And it awakens interest in a really in a natural way. So instead of saying, oh, no, don't do that or don't look at that, but more, focusing on these positive things, like the observance of these pagan holidays and telling them stories and telling them about the legends, the myths of their ancestors, and then telling them stories about, you know, maybe what your grandparents had told you, then you can pass that on, and then keep this storytelling tradition alive, because it's something that's sort of died down, but if you revive that, then it's definitely a positive thing. I think that was, you know, the way that people relayed information in the past, and especially Christianity, that came to either a halt or was very much obstructed. So if we can revive that in whatever way possible, then that's just a really positive thing.
Yeah, don't read your children books about a giraffe and a cow that get together and make a monkey.
Exactly.
So what do you think, Sinead?
Yeah, I totally agree with what you both were saying. And also, I think it's very important for us to homeschool. I know locally here, I'm living in, you know, a little tiny town, and the white children are the minorities at their schools. Not to mention our public education system is just crap anyways, and private. So I'd say homeschool, start homeschool networks if you can with other like-minded families. Now, I know that's extremely hard to do because I don't know anybody like-minded within few hundred miles of me, but I think it's very important to keep our children home. And like Megan was saying, to teach them the traditions of their people and to teach them the accomplishments of their people and to be very proud of those things. There's a book called March of the Titans. I believe it's a two-part series. And I think that should be a standard textbook for all white children of schooling age. It teaches all of the accomplishments of the white race, and it's really awesome. So I think that should be one of the main focuses of the school curriculum.
Yeah, you're right. Reading sagas, reading fairy tales, showing them symbolism, maybe getting some of the clothes, taking, yes. if we live in America, we're so cut off, taking pilgrimages to Europe so they can see yes. where they're from, because most Americans, they don't know where they're from.
Just, no, they don't. just lost.
It's annoying. So there's a lot of, another aspect being pushed by feminists is for women to sleep around a lot. And we touched upon this, you know, how it's liberating. So do you both think it's detrimental to women to have sex with a lot of different guys? Because I see Absolutely. That now, like by the time a girl's 16, she's already had it in every hole with 20 guys, it seems like.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all. And also there's been studies done basically that a female stores the DNA of all of her partners. Now, I don't know if that's, if, not to get too graphic here, I don't know if that's if the semen has been inside of her or not, but she is storing the DNA of people that she has slept with.
Interesting.
So I think, yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I don't think it's good for anybody, especially women. We're not meant to sleep around. That's just not normal. And then you're not developing a deep bond with anybody. It's just this really shallow base kind of thing. I don't think it's healthy for females at all. I think it's very detrimental.
Absolutely. And in the past, if you were sleeping around in ancient times, that could have gotten you killed because, I mean, who would, if you're just sleeping around with random men, then who would, in the cold Northern European winter, who would look after you or go hunting for you, if you didn't have like a steady man, who would go hunting for you and your child? Nobody, because if you were just sleeping with random men, then no one man would feel a specific bond with you. So in the past, that would have, gotten women killed, possibly. And another aspect, these days or at any time, I've read, and it makes sense, is that from a spiritual perspective, that you take on the energy of, everyone you sleep with, mm-hmm. and then that stays with you for forever. So that energetically, of course, I mean, it makes sense that you are exchanging not only bodily fluids, but energy at a deeper or higher level, and then that remains with you. And okay, if something of you remains with that person, so that should be a person that you really have a deep connection with already. Because that's a serious thing. If it's somebody that you hate, really, or come to hate quickly, or are indifferent towards, then their energy staying with you, and then your energy with them, is that really something that you want for the long run? Not so much. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's a serious thing that's unfortunately been now made into a light thing that doesn't matter. But right. That's what people want to think, but it's not true. It's very important.
Well, it's no surprise these feminists are pushing this with the Jews behind it and their role in feminism. And they're especially pushing this on the Gentiles or the Goy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So, yeah. And they're making abortion so readily available that it's being used as a form of birth control. Oh, you got pregnant again? Just get that fifth abortion. We'll pay for it. No big deal.
And I always wonder, what are they doing with these aborted fetuses?
Oh, they're doing a lot of really bad things with them. They're harvesting some of their eggs for IVF. They're putting their fetal tissues into vaccinations. I'm sure there's many other things they're doing. We don't even want to know.
Yeah, I heard Max Factor got caught. They were using it in lipstick because of the high protein or something. So
yeah, they do that with placentas and foreskins as well. They sell them from the hospitals.
God.
Awesome. Yeah, great. Okay.
Well,
I've read something that, they're aborting like these late term babies that were even able to cry and produce urine.
Oh my God.
And then they were just taking them and throwing them into the trash, like really horrible, just heartbreaking stuff.
That's
Late term where they have babies born even earlier than that who in fact survive, these tiny little babies, these tiny little people, and just throwing them out with the trash.
So it's horrific.
Yeah, it really is.
Who are these people? They're just psychotic.
They really are. I mean, the fact that we're even calling it like, abortion, it's murder at that point.
Yeah.
They're not just a clump of cells like feminists love to throw around. It's not true. There's little, from I think 20 weeks on, they can move around and, you know, their heartbeat starts earlier than that. 18 days after conception. Yeah, the heart starts beating.
Wow.
18 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's major.
And what kind of spiritual implications does this have for, you know, humanity to be just murdering children all over the place? Yeah, it's bad.
It's horrific. I wonder about that too. I always wonder about the souls that come in too. What happens or where do they go? Or it's a mystery. We don't know what we're meddling with there.
Yeah, no, we don't.
So last couple questions for you. On the subject of eugenics, you know, people freak out and think it's a bad thing to have some sort of selective breeding. What do you both think about eugenics? Because it's clear we have dysgenics going on right now. Sinead, what do you think?
I used to think the same thing because of all the Nazi propaganda. Eugenics is bad. Basically, you know, men are just going to have lots of babies with a bunch of different women and just leave them. And I thought it was, you know, a terrible thing. But I support eugenics. I think we need to reward white men and women that want to have lots of children and raise them in a sound way. I think that needs to be rewarded. And it's, like you said, it's dysgenics right now. We're encouraging the lowest of the low to breed like rabbits while, you know, someone that's a little bit more educated maybe, or that that really wants this child and wants to do the best for them, you know, they can't afford it or there's not enough time. So I think I completely support eugenics, and it's not this scary thing that we've been told about. You know, they're not going to go kill off your baby because they don't have blue eyes or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's so, yeah, once you get around that propaganda, you know, about the Nazis and everything, yeah, I completely support eugenics. I think it makes sense.
What about you, Megan?
Yeah, eugenics, that's thinking and with awareness and conscientiousness about who you are going to have a child with, or what characteristics you want your child to have, and, you know, putting awareness into this. So, and people should put that level of awareness anyway in picking a partner, and then with this awareness, planning on how their child should be. I mean, and it's funny that that should be so taboo, yet this whole thing with IVF designer babies, that's somehow okay that people can go in and say, I want the baby to look like this, this, and this, and through artificial means that they can get this designer baby. But you want to plan carefully your progeny, then that's somehow taboo because of things that the Nazis supposedly did, you know, these exaggerations.
Yeah, don't you want your children to be beautiful and smarter than you? Don't you look for a man that could possibly contribute to that and just hope to make your line even better and stronger? Of course you do. No, I want to have ugly, dumb babies. Let's have that.
Exactly.
It's common sense. Yeah.
Well, do you think that our children's children are going to rebel against this multi-cult? They're going to go the other way?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that if they're raised the right way, if they're just raised to love themselves instead of how we were raised, which was to hate ourselves, I think that's the only way it can go. You know, if they have pride in themselves and they love their people and they love their culture, then it's just going to be a no-brainer for them. Why would they want to be any part of this multicultural crap? That's so beneath them.
Mm, yeah,
exactly.
So Megan, tell us about your music and what you have going on. I know your husband also has a publication.
Yes. Okay, I have a couple of different musical projects. The one, this acoustic, Nordic pagan kind of folk project called Edith Orlos. I'm working on the next album. I have one album finished, and that deals with you know, the different myths, sort of telling the story of various gods and goddesses, sometimes from their perspective, sometimes telling a kind of story of a person, you know, going into the woods and meeting a god or a goddess, and you know, they're also about the different seasons of nature in, you know, Europe specifically, and different sacred sites. So it's a lot of storytelling, kind of trying to bring back this bardic tradition of you know, telling stories of the ancestors and of the gods and spirituality and whatnot. So that's that, that's Edith Orlog. And then I have a metal project called Witch Blood, and that's, it's not pagan metal in sound. Lyrically, it is pagan. It's more of a very extreme black death. Musically. But it's also largely focused around storytelling. That's the focus there is more on the persecution of witches. Talking about things from those times where a lot of, especially women, were still practicing paganism, but were being burnt and tried as witches. Like in Germany, there were sometimes even whole villages of women burnt at the stake. So I give voice to that with that project. So it's a little bit more brutal. It's a little bit more dark side of history. But both of these projects involve a lot of historical topics and things that, maybe are more personal, like emotionally, but always based around a historical perspective.
And do you have a website?
I do. I'll have to type that out. I mean, you can search for both of these projects, actually, over Facebook. Just if you search for Edith, I-D-I-S. O-R-L-O-G, Edith Orlog, on Facebook, or Witch Blood, all one word, on Facebook. So
we'll be sure to link those up, too. And Sinead, tell us about your Sacred Maternity website, and you also have a radio show, and you're also a musician.
Yeah, so sacredmaternity.com is something that I had started when I was pursuing my short-lived little doula career. Doula is basically a birth attendant, birth assistant. And then I got in contact with a midwife who also would listen to the show that I used to do on Renegade. And we decided that we wanted to turn it into a bit of a blog. And we're always looking for authors to contribute. So if anybody out there likes to write about birth or parenting or anything like that, they're more than welcome to contact me. It's basically a blog with articles. We do some podcasts once in a while, and we offer consultations for anybody that has any questions or wants to work on a birth plan. My show, I've been kind of doing a show once in a while on Renegade. I don't really have a weekly slot or anything because my life is pretty crazy. But I like to pop in once in a while and do a wild card show on a Monday night. So I've done I think maybe three or four past couple Mondays. If anybody wants to check it out, it's on the Renegade site under the archives. And music wise, I've been doing some kind of experimental electronic work. A lot of things aren't up yet because they're the labels own them now, I guess. So I have to wait until they come out. But if anybody wants to check out some of the stuff that I've done, it's up at soundcloud.com/Sinny, S-I-N-N-Y. _ Mac, M-A-C. There's some things that I have up there. I've been kind of reaching out to different racially aware people that have musical talents, and I'm hoping to remotely, obviously we can't all get together, but to be able to work together and write some pro-white music, because I can't really do that with the other producers that I've been working with. I kind of have to be a closet racialist. So it would be nice to be able to
That's a great idea. I've been connecting with lots of musicians who are on that level. So we should definitely all stay in touch and maybe try to meet up somewhere and do something in a studio. I mean, we all know how to do it. So let's do it and put it out there and start a new trend in music, because music sucks right now. I can't listen to anything, the lyrics and just the vibe. We listen to a lot of soundtracks, you know. Actually, what was the last soundtrack? Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. That's a great soundtrack.
It really is a great soundtrack. Yeah. You're right.
We listen to that a lot. It's very moving. So, well, a big thank you to both of you. I've really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you to both of you, too.
Yeah, this has been really nice. Like we were saying earlier, we don't really get to do this a lot, especially with other women. So I thank you both.
We'll do it again sometime. All right. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
Generally, white women have been more responsible when it comes to having children. We have less because we think about things like money and providing a quality life. We think about resources, and we think about things like population and the environment. And we certainly think about doing it with the right man. But now we find ourselves in a situation where a Somali woman moves into our town and pops out 12 to our 2, and our Western nations are quickly becoming crowded. Our children are being pushed into a tight corner, forced to deal with violence and tolerating the intolerable, while being taught that their culture is racist. In places like Germany, France, England, Norway, Sweden, and many parts of America, young white children who are minorities in their school are being beaten and ridiculed, threatened with all sorts of violence. Why would a parent allow this to happen to their child? And all the while, imagine the psychological impact of a child being told that they should rejoice in the fact that they're becoming a minority in their homeland. The UN definition of genocide is: A. Killing members of the group. B. Causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. C. Deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. D. Imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. E. Forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. All of these points are happening in our Western nations. What we are asked to endure, folks, is genocide. If you have any love for your children, mothers, pull them out of these types of schools immediately. Women, start up a network of like-minded European women in your area and build a strong core group for moral and physical support. If you're single, find a good European man and make lots of beautiful white babies. Our babies are beautiful and diverse as they are. We should honor nature and preserve that. Mothers, start up special playgroups and homeschool groups for your European children so you can raise them properly to love their folk and to be proud of their heritage. Teach them to strive for greatness, not to hang their heads in shame, and then be last in line for jobs, scholarships, and school admission. Do you know what they teach in public schools these days about whites? Ladies, it's time to find out, and it's time to make some serious changes for our children's sake. European women raise warriors and kings, not servile victims. And if you can't have kids, think about adopting or being a foster parent for a needy European child, because there are many who need us. And please check in regularly to radio314.com for much more coming up, and you can help support us by signing up for a Red Ice membership at redicemembers.com. We appreciate all our members who make Radio 314 and Red Ice Radio possible. And of course, all of you out there who have our back, you know who you are. I'd encourage any Shield Maidens out there to reach out to me, Megan, and Sinead on Facebook and get connected with us. Since both Megan and Sinead are musicians, I'm going to leave you with a track from each, first starting with Sinead. The song is called Perfect Space, and then one from Megan called I Am the Wind. You'll find all the links in the description text below this interview.